Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and see, I brought you a gift. You brought me gifts on Friday. I brought you a gift on Monday.
Yeah, I brought you a lot of gifts. Happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah.
What
are we done with that now?
What is this?
So this I don't have the name of the person yet because it was delivered to Elmer Cigar House.
Okay.
Which is our satellite office, as people know.
Yes.
And she forgot the woman who received it there, works there. She forgot the letter that's attached to it. So I'll get the name. But we know from the return address that it's Old World Millworks in Maple Park, Illinois. Old World Millworks.
Wow. This is beautiful.
And cutting boards and salt and pepper grinders for both me and you, as well as Sean from Elmwood Park.
Basically, this is for Peyton because he's the cook
in
the house.
Yeah, exactly. But it's very
he's
nice.
He's going to love that. And that cutting board is gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like something out of Minecraft.
Thank you to the folks at Old World Millworks for the cutting board and the salt and pepper shaker.
And you sure they gave this to me? Or is this a hand-me-down?
There's one
for each.
Everybody. Yeah,
okay.
a pair for each. Although I don't think Sean got the cutting board. I think
they
ran out of energy when they finally got to Sean's gift. But anyway.
Well, yeah, and how was your event Friday?
The Illinois Right to Life dinner, our friend Dennis Prager, the keynote speaker, was 800 people, sold out.
Wow.
He did a great job. It was fun. He's always fun
and you made
insightful.
It on time.
And yeah, it's all good.
All right.
Well, speaking of over the weekend, the comedic stylings of the big guy on display at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Yeah, it's happening for the first time in 6 years, meaning a president yucking it up with the D.C. press corps.
And folks, it's been a tough few years for the country. There's one reason why it's great to be here again. Everyone at the White House is so excited. I told my grandkids and Pete Buttigieg they could stay up late and watch this show tonight.
Is that a laugh track or is there an actual audience there?
This is the first time the president attended this dinner in 6 years. It's understandable. We had a horrible plague followed by 2 years of COVID.
It's a bit
right.
We're Trump, laughing about making jokes now about COVID.
Trump was the plague. Yeah, is it too soon? I don't know. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. But the monkeys in the speech writing room for the Biden administration came up with a whole bunch of other yucks at the expense of Republicans, so they think.
But I'm not worried about the midterms. I'm not worried about them. We may end up with more partisan gridlock. But I'm confident we can work it out during my remaining 6 years in the presidency. And folks, I'm not really here to roast the GOP. That's not my style. Besides, there's nothing I can say about the GOP that Kevin McCarthy hasn't already put on tape. You know, at the same time, a lot of people say the Republican Party is too extreme, too divisive, too controlled by one person. They say that's not your father's Republican Party. Ronald Reagan said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down. Today's Republicans say, tear down Mickey Mouse's house. And pretty soon they'll be storming Cinderella's castle, you can be sure of it. But Republicans, seem to support one fella, some guy named Brandon. He's having a really good year, and I'm kind of happy for him.
I see what they did. He owned it. I get it. All right, be nice to great-grandpapa. He has to go to bed pretty soon.
Well, he didn't stay for dinner. He and Jill left. And we don't know if they don't know if it's because of COVID or the old guy had to go to bed.
Yeah.
It was too late for him. Mm-hmm. But Trevor Noah was the host. Did this blow any wind up anybody's skirt?
You know, sir, can I just say, I think everyone will agree that it's actually nice to once again have a president who's not afraid to come to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and hear jokes about himself. I'll be honest. If you didn't come, I totally would have understood. Yeah. Yeah, because these people have been so hard on you, which I don't get. I really don't. You know, I think ever since you've come into office, things are really looking up. You know, gas is up, rent is up, food is up.
Money?
Everything. No, it really has been a tough first year for you, Mr. President. And surely you must be a little worried about 2024. You know, there's a lot of passion on the Republican side. There really is. You know, it's going to be an interesting time. And as you all know, President Biden's lack of a filter does get him into hot water sometimes.
312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick
comment. Now I know where you got the writers for my roast.
I think your roast was a lot more interesting than that roast. Mm. But I did watch it in case we have to, you know, roast somebody again.
The A response, this was an interesting response from BuzzFeed News, of all places. Lysandra Villa. Normally, I wouldn't bother writing an article about something like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because unless you live there, why would you care? Yeah. But the large indoor event at the Washington Hilton was back for the first time since 19, even though members of the administration, including VP Harris, tested positive for COVID in recent days. And it was on in the wake of dozens of people reportedly testing positive after the Gridiron Dinner, another Washington establishment event earlier in the month. Fauci even decided he wasn't willing to take the risk of attending, but apparently the White House Correspondents' Dinner could not be canceled for a third year in a row. And so there I was, the day's White House pool reporter in a packed room of hundreds of unmasked journalists, celebrities, politicians, and President Joe and Jill Biden. I mean, it's just an interesting response because I'm not sure exactly what her point is. She seems to be passively aggressively chiding her brethren for putting this event on, even though she decided to attend. I don't really understand the posture of the left on these things anymore, but why should their inconsistency trouble me, I suppose. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Oh, good morning, you guys. Were those first two lines that he said supposed to be funny?
I believe so. It's a good question, but I believe so. Yeah.
Okay, well, I thought I have a big problem with delivery. Maybe I have a more drier sense of humor, but people don't get me. I'm trying to be funny, but it's my tone, you know, it doesn't come off and they look at me kind of confused a lot of the time, but I'm trying to be funny or I'm kidding. So it's about, you know, context and delivery. That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Thanks.
And the whole dinner went like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Bad jokes. Yeah. CNN ripped on that.
Trevor Noah. I forgot. I didn't know he was still alive, but yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh boy. It wasn't on TV.
I think it was on C-SPAN. It's normally on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
C-SPAN 2?
Saturday viewing on C-SPAN. Nice Saturday night around C-SPAN. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to go watch your roast, Dan. I haven't seen that yet.
Mary Kay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are going to love it, and I want to hear back from you after you watch it.
Well, I have to wait till my mom can come and watch it with me because she'd get mad if she knew I watched without her, so I will do it. We'll do it.
Very good.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay. Yeah, Trevor Noah was unavailable, so Amy Jacobson.
Exactly, and women are funny. That's what.
It turns out there are some men who aren't funny either, including the big guy.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and Heaven Washington is this Lyons Township High School sophomore we talked about last week. We've also mentioned her before because she's a bit of a anti-racist, which is to say racist activist on campus there. But why she is in the news citywide, that's a story that may, I think, go nationally once this is said and done here.
It will.
So she was filmed by one of her friends just kicking the snot out of this freshman at LT, pulling her by the hair, punching and kicking her. And the question is, okay, what's the school going to do about it? They issued a statement about awareness and investigation and so forth. Well, the word we have, and I don't think this has been reported outside of West Cook News, is that Heaven Washington has been expelled. And Lyons Township will announce today that she has been expelled from the school. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. There seems to be a larger problem at Lyons Township High School, which is not inconsistent with the problem in many government school systems and a lot of private schools, too. And I think it starts with, or maybe doesn't start with, but a leading indicator is the $150,000 a year DIE director they have, Jennifer Rowe. That's the diversity, inclusion, equity folks. And they foment the sort of anger, however misplaced, that seems to have taken a hold of Heaven Washington and expressed itself in the ugliest of ways. The girl, I understand that she beat up, and if you watch the video, if you've seen it,
can we tweet it out or do they take it down?
I think Awake Illinois may have posted a version of it that has not been taken down by the big tech minders.
'Cause I'll tell you, when you see it, you want to attack. I wanted to gouge her eyes out after I saw what she did to her, and also too, the person filming is egging her on and. It's just disgusting. It's so unchristian-like.
Right. She's basically saying, you know, she calls the girl that's being beaten up a racist-ass bitch and this and that. And there's no evidence to support that I'm aware of at this time. And also there's some, and this is sort of rumors at this point, but from pretty good sources, there's some indication that the school knew about this. That the school knew that Heaven Washington and perhaps others affiliated with her were targeting this girl such that there was essentially like this girl that was beaten up had an escort going from class to class, and the escort didn't show up for the after class before this incident occurred, which gave the opportunity for Heaven Washington and her friend to descend on her.
It was a whooping. I mean, it is so maddening when you see it. And then this one little girl tries to stop the fight and... It's just sickening that that's going on.
So we further understand that the girl who was the victim of the attack, even though she walks away in the video, she's pretty badly banged up, which you would expect if you see the video and you see what a beating she took.
Oh, he grabbed her by the hair. She grabbed her, Heavenly, grabbed her by the hair and was punching her face repeatedly.
Again, this is information from pretty good sources close to the school. It's not all verified at this point, but did go to the hospital. Maybe has to have surgery on her jaw, brain bleed. So pretty significant injuries. Again, this Heaven Washington, she's spoken before at LTHS school board meetings, Lyons Township school board meetings, which is fine. And so is her grandma. And her grandma sort of gives the pat line that then Heaven Washington begins to rinse and repeat. Her grandma went to LT as well. And she talked about how racist LT was back when she went there. This would be, I think, like the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. She talked about people knocking over a prom bus. Yeah, like with white kids knocking over prom bus with black kids and so forth. Well, there's no real
evidence that that's ever happened. And by the way, as some reporters are doing digging, in her yearbook, talking about Grandma of Heaven, Washington, mm-hmm. her yearbook post, you know, she recounts her time at Lyons Township very favorably.
Oh, really?
So now, 40 years later, it's a haven for racism all of a sudden. And Heaven, Washington was the one who put up this change.org petition, quoting the petition now. She started it. Lyons Township High School has been known for many generations to baby racist students, to baby, mm-hmm. to coddle racist students. We need to hold all racist students, students who have said racial slurs, and who have hate-crimed other students who attend LTHS accountable for their actions. Not only is it hypocritical, it's disgusting and irresponsible for a school that is, quote-unquote, fighting for equality to not do anything to the students who are constantly harassing POC, people of color, who go to their school. Lion Pride is only for students who do not face inequality. It's pathetic. If we want change, it starts now. 880 people signed this petition started by Heaven, Washington, about how racist Lyons Township High School is.
Yeah, she also was featured on ABC7 back when Black History Month began, you know, February, because she posted a picture of a civil rights movement and said, "Happy Black History Month, and don't forget to keep advocating for Black lives." And then she said that racist tropes were venomous and just flooded her Snapchat with calling her horrible things that Liz Nagy said that they couldn't even put on the air. And was that verified? I mean, did Liz Nagy look? But here she is describing, this is Mrs. the sophomore, Washington.
I posted a picture of the civil rights movement.
Okay.
And I said, "Happy Black History Month, and don't forget to keep advocating for Black lives." It's horrible. And I don't understand why people act that way, especially during Black History Month.
Yeah, I think the rhetoric online was going in a couple of different directions from what I understand. I haven't seen it all. But
here's her last comment, just to close the loop on this.
I feel like a lot of people, minority especially, who go to a predominantly white institution, they feel like their voice doesn't matter and that they feel like that they have to be silent when that's not the answer at all.
Right. And so the way to make sure your voice is heard is to take another kid out of class and beat the snot out of her.
Oh, she did say, too, that they're going to stay and fight, that they're not transferring schools. But
yeah, I mean,
that's a metaphor for something else. I don't know.
That can't be taken as a specific threat of violence, right. Of course. But that culture at LT and the culture at so many of these government schools that gives sanction to people like Heaven, Washington, who don't know very much, but and don't think very much, clearly, based on her actions, but have a whole lot of advocacy welling up inside them, because that's what they've been groomed to be, is these sort of mindless political activists. And when that spills over into something violent, well, there's supposed to be somebody to cover for them because they're a member of the oppressed. Why should it be surprising that Heaven, Washington would think that she could beat up a girl based on a claim of racism? Why should she think she should not be able to get away with it any more than what she saw on TV throughout the summer of 2020 and since, where people can rob and loot and beat? And it's reparations, it's a social justice movement, it's expressing the proposition that Black lives matter, and it's beyond reproach.
I mean, she felt empowered enough to kick the you-know-what out of this girl and didn't think that there's going to be any consequences. Because they walk away from it so casually and so cavalierly that it is nauseating. And I just sent the clip to Justin. I don't know if we can play it because people should hear it. How they're taunting her while they're kicking the you-know-what out of her.
Something else, too. We're still waiting for the Western Springs Police Department to issue their report. and to see whether or not they're recommending charges to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, because at minimum, she should be charged with battery based on what is in that video. And so it will be interesting to see. And we know this because the school said they were in contact with the Western Springs Police Department. So what will the Western Springs Police Department do? And then what will the Cook County State's Attorney's Office do? Those are two open questions as well.
Especially if the victim, you said, had to go to the hospital and there's some bleeding on the brain, that could affect charges as well.
David in Winnetka.
Yeah, good morning. Guys, I was the gentleman that sent the video up in Lake Forest last week. I don't know if you had a chance to view that or not, but I recently heard, and I changed my opinion on that whole thing, by the way. It looked like the white girl was the antagonizer in that. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it. But what I did want to add, I heard something very smart recently said by a black man, which was we don't have a country that is racist, systemically racist. We have an angry race of violent people with horrible leadership and just bad upbringing. And it's so very true.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thanks for the call, David.
Three boys were charged after a fight in a bathroom at Niles West High School on Friday. They got charged.
Tom in Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. This girl will not be arrested by the Western Springs Police. She won't be prosecuted. She'll be passed on through high school, just like all the other attackers in high school now are. Well, and she'll be exalted and probably end up with million-dollar houses like the BLM leaders.
Well, I don't know about that, Tom. I mean, again, our reporting, thanks for the call, is that she has been expelled, and the school will be announcing that today. It will be interesting what Western Springs Police do. I suspect they will arrest her, because if I'm the police chief in Western Springs and I see this, well, that's a battery and we're going to arrest her. Now, whether the Cook County State's Attorney declines to prosecute or not, well, that's up to the Cook County State's Attorney. But just because Kim Fox doesn't want to do her job doesn't mean we're not going to do ours. That's the posture the Western Springs Police Department should take.
Right.
And I suspect they will. We'll see. John in Willowbrook.
Yeah, why is it all these black kids, people go in white areas and cause trouble? We don't go in their neighborhood.
Well, this is
Where
a school. This is a school. No. This is not white, black in a neighborhood. This is a school.
They go to school or what? They go in the neighborhood, schools, whatever. We have a school over in Kennedy School over by Midway. Same thing happened. Gangs came in there. And they cause none of problems. These people are savages. They don't know what it's like to live like a human being. Thank you.
All right, John. Well, again, per David and Winnetka, what you have is some people, white, black, and other, who for some reason believe that they can behave like savages. And I think we were talking about some of those reasons, including this poisonous identitarian culture. And this neo-Marxism in the form of Black Lives Matter that has infected K-12 education. So we'll continue to provide information on this story as more becomes available, I'll tell you that.
Well, and back to that Niles West, the Skokie police, they charged them all with battery right away. They saw the tape, they got it. Within hours, those three kids were arrested. Western Springs should do the same.
Corey Woodlawn.
Hey, morning, Dan. Morning, Amy.
Morning.
I did want to add that it's a persistent attitude of activism in the neighborhood. And it's the Democratic Party tapped into that with the Leon Finney's always agitating for this or for that. And these kids, they wear like a badge of honor now. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Corey. It's a good point. And I did watch that Lake Forest video that David from Winnetka had sent us. Yeah, I think what he said in terms of his view of it after watching and reflecting, that the girl instigated it, the white girl instigated, and that was a black white thing too. But it's not the level of violence that we're talking about in LTHS. So anyway, we'll keep you updated on what Western Springs Police do. We'll see if what our understanding is turns out to be true, that she has been expelled, and where this case goes from here.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
So, again, the audio doesn't give you the full flavor of the video, which Wake Illinois, check them out because I think they still have it up. But here's some of the flavor from the girl who was filming the beating and offering running commentary.
Wait, no, I said, I don't know.
See her ass, raise her. Yeah, see her ass, Daddy. Yeah, yeah, take her. Yeah. Yeah, get your
Heaven.
Yeah, bitch. Now your hair's on the floor. You look stupid as Yeah, Abby, beat her ass. She looks fucking stupid as hell with your hair on the floor. You got Yeah, get your fucking ass beat. Yeah, your hair's on the floor, dumbass. You look fucking stupid now.
The amazing thing that this could go on in a hallway of a public school and there's no adults around. There's no, as one of our callers mentioned, where were the boys to step in to break this up? Somebody to step in to break this up.
This little girl with wearing a blue T-shirt, she looked younger than a freshman. She was the one that stepped in and tried, but they wouldn't get her off of her.
Yeah, that was that. And, you know, and this went on for a good 45 seconds.
And we have a text message from a retired police officer. This should be charged as a hate crime, too. If they prove that she went after, I don't know.
Yeah.
She was white.
I mean, the whole hate crime thing. It's
your favorite topic.
It's just so silly. I hate starting from the premise of the left. Like, let's play their identitarian politics. The focus is on the behavior, not the motivation. The motivation is interesting for the larger case, but, you know, like the layering in all this stuff and who hates who, you're responsible for your conduct. If she's held accountable for the battery, that's good enough for me and for a law and order at LT.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Is it me or does DHS Secretary Ali Mayorkas bear a striking resemblance to Gollum from Lord of the Rings? I was thinking about that over the weekend when he was prattling on about his precious perfect with Dana Bash on State of the Union, CNN's program. Yeah, CNN has a couple programs left. Asking about this Ministry of Truth, Disinformation, Governance Board, potato, potato, exactly what it will entail, how it will function. Why are people making such a big whoop over it?
Disinformation that creates a threat to the security of the homeland is our responsibility to address. And this department has been addressing it for years, throughout the years of the prior administration and an ongoing basis. Disinformation from Russia,
right.
China.
We know the problem.
So what it does is it works to ensure that the way in which we address threats, the connectivity between threats and acts of violence are addressed without infringing on free speech, protecting civil rights and civil liberties, the right of privacy. And the board, this working group, internal working group, will draw from best practices and communicate those best practices to the operators, because the board does not have operational authority.
Will American citizens be monitored?
No.
Guarantee
that. Well, so what we do, we in the Department of Homeland Security don't monitor American citizens.
You don't.
Mm-hmm. And we'll tackle that in a minute. But Mayorkas was then asked about this Disinformation Governance Board. Well, what happens if there's a change in administrations? Do you still have confidence in the Disinformation Governance Board if it would potentially fall into the wrong hands, Allie?
Would you be okay if Donald Trump were president, if he created this disinformation board, governance board, or if it is in place and he wins again in 2024, that he's in charge of such a thing?
I believe that this working group that gathers together best practices, makes sure that our work is coordinated, consistent with those best practices, that we're safeguarding the right of free speech, that we're safeguarding civil liberties, I think is an extraordinarily important endeavor.
Mm-hmm. That was non-responsive, but I hope somebody asks Trump that question or he raises that question at a rally, upcoming rally, because, of course, the correct answer for any freedom-loving American, much less one aspiring to the presidency, would be, Dana, if President Trump were president, there would be no disinformation
right.
governance board.
Dismantled immediately.
For more on this topic, as well as updating the situation in Ukraine, please be joined for a weekly confab with Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, author of the book Brutal War, Jungle Fighting, Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's early.
Well, but this is your choice. We're not forcing you to be here if you need your beauty sleep. Hey, listen.
Hey,
go ahead.
In my markets, I mean, first of all, not commonly known, but pretty credible reporting that Marcus has already tried to quit. Oh. He knows.
They won't let him.
He is just running the circus. And this is all indefensible. He's tried to walk out the door. The administration won't let him. So even he knows that the Titanic is underwater. The other thing is, the problem, there's a lot of problems with this board. Arguably, it has nothing to do with the department's mission. But the greatest problem is the credibility of the administration. The reason why this is such a hubbub is because nobody trusts them. And to say that, you know, this is all nonpartisan, I mean, it's not. I was on the Homeland Security Advisory Council. We all got fired. Our greatest sin is we weren't appointed by Democrats. Mm-hmm. So this notion that somehow this is nonpartisan is just nonsense.
Well,
so,
of course. And the also to this, you know, we process disinformation to provide for the protection of Americans and so on and so forth. I mean, that all sounds, that's the flowery language that you get all the time. But, of course, the question is always in, or the issue is always in the details. Well, who defines misinformation and then what action is going to be taken to combat whatever somebody defined as misinformation? And particularly against a backdrop where everybody in this administration is saying that the greatest threat to America is domestic, not international.
Right. And then you hire a 30-year-old, 30-something, completely unqualified, hyper-partisan wacko to run the board and then expect people to have credibility. I mean, I think this is this board news has been out there for weeks, and the administration offered no explanation about what it is and how it works. So he's just doing damage control.
And he's terrible at it, by the way. Just as he did damage control on the border, and he was terrible at that before the House Judiciary Committee last week.
Oh, that was a complete dumpster fire. You know, the one thing they didn't get into in that hearing, which I think is super important for people to understand, is the Biden strategy. We all know the Biden strategy is to move as many people, illegal aliens, into the country as quickly as possible. And that his idea of fixing the border is not having a bottleneck at the border. But I'm not sure everybody realizes how the principal instrument he's doing for that is NGOs. These are supposed to be, you know, faith-based, non-governmental organizations, you know, helping people out. And basically, he is paying them to move people into the country. The United States is currently running the largest human trafficking infrastructure on the planet Earth, and the taxpayers are paying for it.
So from that hearing, just to put a fine point on it, because I want to go over the numbers. We did this on Friday, but I want to get your expert viewpoint. So the highlights for me. Mayorkas, he doesn't know where 42 people who tried to enter this country illegally and who are on the no-fly list, the terrorist watch list, he doesn't know where they are. The greatest threat to America is domestic terrorists, and he can't recall any DOJ referral he's made of a domestic terrorist or suspected domestic terrorist. 800,000 illegals released into the U.S. will undoubtedly commit crimes, but he doesn't really have a plan to respond to what he believes will occur from those who have been released into this country who are here illegally. And he has no particular plan to deport 1.2 million people in this country illegally who've had their cases adjudicated and have removal orders against them.
Right. So, you know, we focus a lot on, you know, bringing in as many illegal aliens as possible. Pay less attention to the fact that they are completely dismantling all the capability to deport anybody. And if you have a system where there's no consequences, there's no enforcement, it just falls apart. So if you run the numbers, at the end of Biden's term, the unlawful population in the United States, the illegal population, will probably more than double what it is now. That means that if we were a state of the union, it would be like the fifth or fourth largest state in the country. And the reason why that number is so important, excuse me, dealing with allergies, the reason why that number is so important is that every problem that you just mentioned, or every problem you could think of, terrorism, crime, cost to the burden on taxpayers, that just escalates, you know, beyond measure. And that's what we're going to be faced with. Sorry.
Get this guy some Flonase.
Don't they have NyQuil at the Heritage Foundation or anything?
No, it's you know, it's funny. I was in India all week. I got back. I was back a day. I thought, oh, this is great. And then I started.
I think
you, again. So maybe
you're allergic to the Beltway. Did you ever think of that?
Sure, Boz. Well, I want to ask you this. Our outgoing congressman, Adam Kinzinger, introduced a measure, a legislation that would give congressional authorization for President Biden to use military force in Ukraine if Russia uses chemical or biological weapons. What do you think of this?
Now, did he not study the history of the Vietnam War? I mean, you don't do that. I mean, this is nonsense. We don't escalate the direct involvement of American forces in things that are not a vital interest in the United States, period. So I don't know why anybody would listen to this guy. Don't know why he gets news. Don't know why he thinks this is a good idea. The United States should fight for its vital interest. Ukraine's important. Support the stability of Europe. That's why we're doing what we're doing. But we're not going to fight for Ukraine. It's just stupid.
Speaking of Russia and Ukraine, so this secret visit that was made by Pelosi and Schiff, boy, really bringing out the A-team, that's got to inspire confidence among Zelensky and his forces. The importance, if any, of that visit from those two?
Well, look, I think anytime foreign officials go, it pokes a finger in Putin's face. But what really matters is what's going on the ground. And what really matters is the level of assistance that we provide to the Ukrainian people. I mean, that's the real test. These visits are just photo ops.
And what's your understanding of what is happening on the ground? What is the state of the balance of forces and what's, you know, where do you see the outcome?
I mean, all right. Right now we have a limited Russian offensive that doesn't seem to be going much anywhere. So unless the Russians do something dramatically different than what they're doing now, it looks like we're headed to a bit of a military stalemate. I mean, I don't see the Ukrainians going on the offensive. I mean, even the Ukrainians have said they would need 60,000 troops to go on the offensive, and they don't have that kind of capability.
Well, so then, what is victory look like? If this is going stalemate, if despite what SecDef Austin said, that the Ukrainians are not going to push the Russians back to Russia, why would the Russians retreat if they can achieve a stalemate and still have operational control of some of that additional eastern portion of Ukraine that they want?
Yeah. Well, I think Ricky is defined by what happens after. If the shooting does stop, what happens after the shooting stops? So nobody's ever going to let Ukraine in NATO, so Ukraine has to be sufficiently armed and rebuilt so it can deter future Russian invasions. Then we have to focus on what's important to us, which is countering the Russian military threat. So that means you have to have a NATO that is forward deployed and ready to defend the front lines, and you have to have energy independence so you're not subject to energy blackmail. These are the things that really worry me, because those are the big two really hard things to do. And the question is, are they up for that? And the problem is, when I hear from this administration, I don't hear that they're up for that. I don't hear that they're up for giving up climate change to focus on American energy dominance. I don't hear that they're up for really pushing NATO allies to do what they need to do, not just to up their spending because there's a war going on, but to sustain a military presence at NATO's frontier to deter future Russian action. So I feel Russia will come out of this war weakened if everything continues to play out as it does. But then the question is what do we do with those intervening years? And I'm afraid that the Biden team, you know, being the follower chief, will just waste them.
Is there any horizon that's reasonable to expect at this point in terms of how long we get to that point of what happens when the bullets stop flying?
I think the next two years will be really crucial.
2 years.
Whenever the shooting stops. Yeah.
2 years.
Because Putin will have to rebuild his military before he can threaten anybody again. So what do people do in that gap when he's weakened in order to make sure that he's not a threat in the future? And I think that window's, you know, going to be months and years, not forever. And so the question is, do we all go back to sleepwalking through history, or do we take this seriously so we're not spending tens of billions of dollars next time on wars that could have been avoided if we just done the right thing to begin with?
He is Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, VP, Catherine Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, author of Brutal War, Jungle Fighting, Papua New Guinea, 1942, and he ran off to get some Kleenex, I think.
Exactly. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, just extending our conversation about that disinformation governance board, because over the weekend you had the left going apoplectic over conservatives and free speech advocates like, say, us and many others questioning the utility and legitimacy of the misinformation governance board, misinformation. The obsession of the left with silencing criticism under the guise of misinformation and disinformation. That's really the point. And I thought this was an interesting comment, considering that David Zurawiec used to be a editor for the Baltimore Sun. It gives you a real insight into these D.C. press corps types and how upset they are about the power they've lost and, you know, are losing or fear they may lose if an Elon Musk, for example, is allowed to run Twitter as a free speech platform. Remember what David Mamet said last week from that interview he did with Adam Carolla. They fear exclusion. And what is that a proxy for? Power, influence.
No, I think there's a bigger problem that when we focus on the personalities of people like Elon Musk and people say, oh, I think Elon's thinking this or that. There's a bigger problem here about how we are going to control the channels of communication in this country. In 1927, we had the Radio Act. 1934, the Communications Act. Congress stepped in. We made rules. FCC wasn't great, but it's still regulating the broadcast industry. You can't use vulgar language. You can't do all these things with speech. We gave over our what amounts to our airwaves or our internet waves to Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk. And we are in so much trouble because those guys believe in making money. We've already seen that with the 2016 election in Zuckerberg when he was taking rubles for ads from Russia and say, oh, I think it's crazy to think they had any influence on this election. Musk is the same. Musk doesn't want it. Oh, you know, he's upset with the SEC, tried to, how dare they question him? You know what I'm saying? This is dangerous. We can't think anymore in this country. We don't have people. No, I'm serious. We don't have people in Congress who can make regulations that can make it work. I think we can look to the Western countries in Europe for how they are trying to limit it. But you need controls on this. You need regulation. You cannot let these guys control discourse in this country, or we are headed to hell. We are there. Trump opened the gates of hell, and now they're chasing us down.
Wait, we got to get it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. We need to look to our Western allies as to how to do this. What do you have in mind, Dave? Government licenses for legitimate news outlets like that grade school drama teacher in Canada is efforting to do? Should we go that way? How about the George Washington of Eastern Europe consolidating all the media under one umbrella and having it directed by the state, eliminating outlets that dissent from the the established orthodoxy as presented by the state. The state is the source of all legitimate information. By the way, I know it's so funny to listen to former newspaper editors talk about these terrible people who want to make money. He's on CNN.
Is he trying to make
CNN money? Is a private corporation that better make money if it wants to stay on the air. It tries to make money. It just is doing making a lot less of it these days because hating on Trump
is getting old.
Well, it's a problem when Trump is no longer there.
Right.
And people have moved on, even though CNN hasn't.
They don't have COVID. They don't have Trump. And CNN Plus was a catastrophic failure, costing, what, $300 million?
We have to control. We have to control licenses for at least for the Internet, create a new Internet bureaucracy or create a new bureaucracy like the FCC to regulate the Internet and provide licenses to, what, the World Wide Web? I mean, that's just, it's such an interesting comment because it just provides you a real insight into how the legacy media higher-ups think, how they were thinking when they were relevant, and what they're thinking now that they're much less relevant as they try to cling to relevance. Very instructive.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, the Socialist Spice Girls are all excited about the big guy looking to deal on student loan debt forgiveness. Not as much as they wanted, $50,000 per person.
Ooh.
But apparently Biden kicking around $10,000 per person for certain categories of borrowers. And this is how Frances Parker Spice, oh yeah, educated right here in Chicago. Frances Parker Spice, now a congressperson from Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley, here's how she responded.
It's also a gender justice issue. Two-thirds of this $2 trillion crisis are women. And certainly Black women disproportionately have higher debt. So this is an economic justice issue. It's a racial justice issue. It's an intergenerational issue. I can't tell you the number of parents that I've met that are saying they cannot retire because they co-signed loans for their children or that they're still paying on their own loans. And now they're also paying their children's grandparents on fixed income. 76 years old, still paying student debt. Millennial, Gen Z, unable to purchase a home, to start or to expand a family or to start a business. So this nearly $2 trillion crisis is really choking at the promise of our families, our communities, and the country writ large. And the president does have the authority.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line, are you sold?
I mean, what does she have anything to back up her claim that Black women have higher college debt? She's just virtue signaling all over the place.
I mean, you don't need to back up your claim. It's a justice issue.
Figure it out. Then don't co-sign, you know, your kid's student loan and then work two jobs to pay it off. I mean, I paid mine off every month. And it was hard, but I finally did it. You can work an extra job on the side. I mean, why I don't understand why people just think that they can borrow money and not pay it back.
I like our friend Ilya Shapiro's tweet on this. Ilya Shapiro's the pending executive director of the Georgetown Law Center. We had him on to talk about that, legal scholar. Oh, yeah. He tweeted, "My mortgage identifies as a student loan." Really good. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Did you have student loans that you had to pay back?
I did. I paid them back. And so, you know,
most of us paid them back, right?
The argument, though, is that, you know, some people got hoodwinked or made some bad choices. Part of the everybody has to get a college degree. They were duped by some perverse incentives and racked up a bunch of debt. And, you know, this is a way for those who have more to help those who have less. This is just another way to do that, to make life more fair in America. The Wall Street Journal opined on this over the weekend, providing a little bit of historical context, which is always helpful. Remember how Democrats sold their student loan takeover as a money saver? Remember that? Yeah, this was back in 2010 when they nationalized the student loan market, eliminating guaranteed fees for private lenders and using the savings to pay for Obamacare. It's a money saver. And now here we are talking about how many thousands or tens of thousands of dollars we are to provide those who would like their student loan debt wiped away. Oh, and the argument goes, too, that it's not the those without college degrees subsidizing those with college degrees. That's not true. The other side will say that's not true because those with college degrees are more likely to be subsidizing, generally speaking, those without college degrees, because those without college degrees are more likely to not be paying taxes. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that, the picture of America and how we allow ourselves to be bribed with our own money. About 25% of all college grads earn less than 30 grand a year. One in seven make less than the poverty line. So those college degreed individuals, they're not paying taxes. I mean, not income taxes. A little bit more complicated than that. And this whole business of extending the kleptocracy. You know, we know this in Illinois. We see the scam all the time. It's presented itself in so many ways. And it does at the federal level, too. I mean, we subsidize Medicare. People get a lot more healthcare dollars out than they put in through taxation over their work life. That's a fact. And nobody wants to talk about that, but I will. Because this is the kleptocrats' game. And while some people, like in this case, will say, cut it out because, like me or like Amy or like a lot of you, took out a loan, paid back the loan. So cut it out. Many more people, as we've seen in Illinois, will say, cut me in. I want in because I know the best I can hope for in a kleptocracy is to get a bribe and to be bribed with my own money. That's the best I can hope for. There's no way you're going to unwind these entitlements. So just cut me into it. And this is how something that starts out as a entitlement for the very poor creeps its way into being an entitlement for middle-income families and beyond. If the politicians would have their way, they're happy to continue and expand their Rube Goldberg bribery schemes to the upper reaches of household income because they want everybody cut in on the deal or feeling like they're cut in on the deal so that they perpetuate these programs and their power and their voter bases. That's how kleptocracy works, and this is just another example of it. Jordan, Forest Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Talk about a moral hazard. This is one. So we're going to reward people that have not paid off a loan. We're not going to reward people that maybe took out two jobs to pay off their loans. What, you know, talk about, you know, rewarding, in some cases, irresponsible behavior. Okay. They also signed their line on the dotted, signed their name on the dotted line saying, I will pay back this loan. You know, so what will other people that take out student loans in the future? They can say, well, you know, I think I won't pay it off as quickly. I might get it all written off later.
Well, right, this is the cut me in.
It's the cut me in.
Cut me in. It's terrible,
right?
until I get my special deal.
Well, the Democrats too are trying to grow their party, because this kid that's
grow it
just
back.
You know, like they're buying votes. They're trying to expand their party because, you know, that's why Peyton and Neil are very interested in the Bernie Sanders and AOC and yes.
And by
there's
going to
be student loan forgiveness, so we're going to vote Democrat. No, you're not.
And by the way, since Frances Parker Spice there, the socialist Spice Girl, was talking about this justice and that justice, racial justice and gender justice. Oh, gender justice.
Right, gender justice. Yeah, more women owe more money on student loan debt than men.
Yeah, women earn 60% of the bachelor's degrees.
Right. Did she not know that?
So what this also is subsidizing radicalized young women to add to the ranks of the socialist Spice Girls, you see. Our friend Mark Perry over at Carpe Diem blog did his annual update of the female share of U.S. bachelor's degrees. He's looked at it for over the course of 50 years from 71 to 2020, 1971 to 2020. And again, 3 out of 5 BAs earned by women. The female share the 7 of the most popular college majors for women.
Yeah.
Health professions, education, public administration, psych, foreign languages, English, comms, visual and performing arts. In 2019, the female share of degrees in those 7 fields ranged from 62 to 84%. Wow. 84% in health professions. You want to see the socialization of the healthcare industry continue unencumbered. And we're also seeing increases in the number of females getting degrees in computer science and engineering. There's still a minority, but it's increased, and there's been a real press, obviously, right, STEM for women and so forth. We've talked about this. And that's all well and good to an extent. It's all well and good to the extent of we're getting lectured by Ayanna Pressley about gender, this being a gender justice issue.
She brought up race and gender right away.
When the system is wired to those people she thinks are on the wrong end of the scales of justice, or the scales of justice are tilting against them, when in point of fact they're tilting for them. And this just provides more tilt. Dave in Downers Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy.
Morning.
Hey, listen, I didn't pay for my daughter's colleges because I told them it was their future. And you know what? When you pay for your own college, you gain pride when you pay that loan off. They paid their loan off during school and after school. And the thing that these politicians, Democrats especially, want to do is take away the emotions that drive people forward, like pride, shame. You know, when you give them a credit card and tell them it's food stamps, they don't have any shame, and they just stay on the government dole. It's ridiculous. We shouldn't be paying for people's loans that they take out.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
Do you remember the day when you paid off your student loan? Because I do. I remember I had a big celebration with myself. Called my mom, like, Mom, I'm all done. I did it, and it was a moment. It was a moment of pride.
Sure, worth every penny going to Iowa.
Oh, you're so rude. It's not where you go to school. It's how you go to school.
That's right,
Dan.
How old were you when you finally paid off your loans? Since you remember the day so fondly.
No, I mean, I graduated in 91. I paid off the debt in 1997.
Oh, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
You made monthly payments that I could afford. But my first job, I made $10,000 a year. So I was really struggling back then. Ramen noodles was my best friend.
Yeah. It's a real rags to riches story. I haven't heard such an inspiring story since the one about J.B. Pritzker being raised by a single mom. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. Well, you know, the real core subsidy here is really all of the assistant associate provost for whatever equity or student activities that have been getting all this salary all this time. And at higher rates, because the government keeps subsidizing this, giving all these grants and scholarships and loans away and so forth, that they're the ones who are getting the core subsidy here. And then who's left holding the bag? All with worthless degrees or degrees don't get them, a job that's worthwhile. I mean, that's your core subsidy. And so therefore, the colleges should be the one who should be saddled with this cost, not the taxpayers. It should go back on them. There should be a massive clawback with higher tax rates on these colleges, whether they're nonprofit, whatever their tax status was or is. It should be retroactively applied to them for basically ripping off all these kids who are now left holding the bag. Because that's what this is. One big payable, and the American people have the receivable, and now it's the phantom of the balance sheet. That's what receivables and payables are, and now they're wondering how the hell to pay for all this. So go take it out of the colleges. Go take it out of Harvard and Yale, all these other schools that have these huge endowments,
right,
with, you know, $150 billion or $100 billion a coin in their endowments. Take it from them. Claw it back from them. That's where it should be. That's where we should go back. I mean, it's probably more than enough money in all these colleges to cover the $1.9 trillion or whatever it is.
Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, that's the position that Steve Moore takes, which is tax the endowments to pay for to do whatever student debt forgiveness you want to do to pay for or to reduce the cost of university. Yeah, you know, I like removal of the federal government from college financing more so than I like more insinuation by the federal government in the form of taxation. Just get, you know, we need to get government out of these businesses that it perverts. And so obviously the government involvement in underwriting college educations has made college tuition increase at a multiple of the rate of inflation over the last 50 years. Much as it's done the same thing the federal government has done in healthcare. So rather than getting into sort of the punitive nature, getting into the punitive where you're talking about we're going to tax them and they shouldn't have. Well, wait a second. You provided this massive subsidy and you expected these colleges and universities to what? To not respond to that incentive and take advantage of it to their own ends? I mean, I'm hardly defending higher education, but let's go back to the source of the problem. It's the government intervention. So why don't we deal with the source and remove the government intervention and let these colleges, universities sink or swim on their own however they want to? I much prefer the conversation go in that direction than some sort of quick fix to prevent the student loan forgiveness entitlement through taxing endowment funds, even though I like Steve and I like Frank, but yeah, we need to have more of the conversation of just get government out. I don't want government to be the arbiter. I don't want government to be the payer of first resort. I want government out of these decisions as it pertains to higher education, as it pertains to my health care. Get it out. Connect consumer to provider. Let them work it out. Karen Beecher.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say what a bunch of crybaby wuss bags. I was 18 and lost both my parents. And it took me a year to kind of, you know, get my act together. And it took me 5 years to get my degree because I worked full-time and had a bunch of side gigs. When I graduated in 5 years, without any parents in the audience, I owed $1,292.36. I paid that off in a year and a half, not the 3 years allowed, again, because I worked full-time and had a bunch of side gigs. And both of my kids knew my story. Oh, my God. They were so tired of my story. But they knew when they were going to college, that was their choice. And their gifts for Christmas and birthday, 4 years, was a payment on that loan. But the minute they graduated, both of them with their parents in the audience, that debt was theirs. And my son, to try and best me, and he did it, he paid off his loan, all of his loans, in a year and a half, and then taught financial literacy for Lincoln Park District. And my daughter, she too is now fully employed, working to pay off her school loan.
Very good. Very good. Thanks for the call, Karen. Appreciate it. Good story. Mom paying it forward. Her kids paying it forward from mom. Steve, Southside.
Hi, yeah. Thanks. Love you guys on the call. I kind of have a different perspective a little bit, and
all right.
I do agree that we need to get government out, but there are times where I feel like the left is too far left and the right is too far right. You know, there are, I don't look at it as a one size fits all.
I think that there are isolated situations where we probably do have to help, like social workers who spend a ton of money going to college and then come back with little money in return for salaries and careers. And, you know, they do a lot of good. And perhaps there is a endowment fund for particular jobs that, you know, we can help pay the way for college. But I do understand that there are people who's going to take advantage of it and things like that. But it kind of is like, well, I went to college. I paid it off. Everybody should do the same. Everybody's not making the same amount of money. Everybody's not going in the same level of career.
Well, yeah. Thanks for the call, Steve. I appreciate it. I mean, you know, choices. But, yeah, there are other private arrangements, income share agreements. Mitch Daniels at Purdue has been pushing those. But here's the bottom line, that social worker, you want to go into something that doesn't pay as much, and you know that. And so, well, think about that on the front end. Even if you think about it on the back end, here's the deal. If you removed government from inflating these tuitions, there wouldn't be such debt burden paying to pay off once you did get out into the workforce, even if you went into a profession that doesn't pay as much as other professions. That's sort of my point.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We have an update on a story we've been following since last week. We talked a bit about earlier in the show, this fight that occurred, really a beating that occurred in the hallways at Lyons Township South High School. A girl named Heaven Washington beat up another girl. She's a sophomore there, beat up another girl. Heaven is black. The other girl was white. This
a
is
freshman.
This is relevant. I'll explain in a second for those not following it. And one of Heaven's friends filmed the beating. And apparently there may be more videos with different angles here. But Awake Illinois, and I retweeted it this morning, Awake Illinois tweeted out a video, even though YouTube has taken down some versions of it for all kinds of obvious reasons. The relevance of the black-white thing is because the scuttlebutt was Heaven Washington went after this girl because she did something that was racist in nature.
And we don't know what it was.
Well, we have an update. Mm-hmm. So this is from someone close to the situation. I'm not going to provide more details than that. 2 weeks earlier, Heaven Washington, the attacker, had confronted this girl that she beat up, as you see in the video, confronted her, snatched her phone, and threatened her. A police officer at the school, and there is one, said he would charge her with disorderly conduct. The police officer at the school, I guess, is in an office right next to the assistant principal, Adam Davis. Well, the assistant principal, Adam Davis, was spoken with by the girl who was beaten up before she was beaten up. She got word from a friend that Heaven Washington was going to beat her up that day. She went to the assistant principal and told him. He sent her back to class. The next period, she got jumped.
So they didn't do their duty and protect her.
The Wednesday after the beating, they brought her to the nurse's office the day of. She told them what happened. There was no ambulance. Her parents, one or both of her parents, took her to the ER. And the officer said to her, "Why didn't you tell me they were looking for you?" Meaning Heaven and her friends. And so now, according to this version of events, we know that she told the assistant principal, Adam Davis, sent her back to class, and he didn't even bother to tell the officer who's in the door, office right next to him, cop on site at the school.
Yeah, that's a dereliction of duty. He should have known better.
She is home now, the girl who was beaten up. Concussion, sprained wrist, whiplash, torn earring out. So she's got beaten up pretty good, but apparently she's okay now, which is good. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Also reported earlier in the show, the understanding was, again, from a reliable source, that she was, Heaven Washington, was going to be expelled, and that announcement would be made by the high school today. Now there's some uncertainty as to whether or not they are going to expel her.
You've got to be kidding me. If anybody saw that video, she should be in jail, let alone not even at school.
And there's no word from the Western Springs police either. The school saying last week they were in consult with the Western Springs police about this incident.
How could they not look at that video and not arrest her right away?
I mean, it's a pretty clear-cut case of aggravated battery. Oh, by the way, the story as to why she was targeted, according to, the scuttlebutt within the school, is that the girl who was beaten up allegedly, like, sang a rap song in the bathroom, and that offended Heaven Washington. She took that as being racist, and that's why they targeted her, she and her friends targeted her. But that is disputed, that even that happened, much less even if it had happened, how that warrants a beating like you see in this video. It clearly does not.
And white people can rap too. Thank you. Can you imagine if it was reverse roles? If it was a white girl beating up a black student, this would be national news.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be protests.
And by the way, it's not about black versus white in the sense that we're saying something about black kids versus white kids. We're saying something about politics. We're saying something about the culture, the leftist culture in every institution, including K-12 school systems. That's what we're saying, where their people are treated differently based on their race, which runs foul of equal justice before the law. Runs afoul of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, runs afoul of decency, that we judge people based on their conduct, not on the color of their skin or other non-behavioral characteristics. And so that's why it's relevant to say, you know, to envision what would happen if it was a black girl who was beaten up like this by a white girl and her friends videoed and so forth. Of course there would. And there would be, we would have heard, I mean, this is 5 days ago, we would have heard from the Western Springs police chief.
Of course.
We would have heard from the superintendent.
Yeah.
We would have heard from the principal. We would have heard from the parents. Everybody would be lawyered up and in front of cameras.
Well, and I'm not defending her actions, obviously, but she probably felt empowered because the school has catered to her every complaint.
Well, and again, I mentioned this before, you know, her story is that Heaven Washington, the school has been racist when my grandma went there and so on and so forth. I mentioned her grandma, since she's made herself part of this. Her grandma's name is Kyle Louise Washington. From her yearbook, Kyle Louise Washington enjoyed her experience at LT. We'll never forget the cafeteria on sunny afternoons, like going for walks when the sky was blue, thought that LT could use some improvements. That doesn't sound like somebody who is beset by a racist institution who is, you know, and it was oppressing her on a daily basis. But now in retrospect, that it is au courant to level those charges. Now we've got grandma and granddaughter making those claims, and they've been making those claims for since she got there. So this is a couple of years worth of claims about the institutional racism in Lyons Township that has $150,000 dye director and apparently an assistant principal that is asleep at the switch.
Well, Western Springs police, shame on them. I mean, a similar incident happened Thursday at Niles West High School. Three boys beat up this guy in the bathroom. He had facial injuries. So he had to go to the hospital. Skokie police stepped in right away, took all three boys into custody, got them out of school and charged them with battery. What the heck? I mean, the same thing, too, is filmed. It was like taped, so people saw it.
Grandma Washington was on the cheerleading team, too.
Oh.
So it sounds like it was real.
Well, the family's not going to like it if their little precious daughter or granddaughter is expelled from LT.
Well, here's the thing.
That's the thing. They're not going to take that sitting down, and you know they're going to even make up things. Conjecture on my part. They'll do whatever they have to do to keep her in school.
How long does an investigation with this sort of video evidence take? How long does it take to interview the principal parties, any witnesses, talk to the school, and then make a charge, no charge decision?
I mean, you don't even have to interview anybody. The assault is right there. Victim, suspect. Boom.
Jason in Geneva, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan. How are you?
Morning.
Hey, so calling in, so I have an interesting perspective, I guess. You know, listening to you guys' story about the whole Lyons Township thing. So I am a school resource officer in the Chicagoland area. So part of the issue with that particular incident is that inside the schools, it really depends on the administration, because I don't know if you'd seen that recent article that just came out a couple of days ago from the superintendent for the State Board of Education encouraging school districts to not cooperate
right
with yeah. the school resource officers with picketing
with,
kids.
With the police. So yeah.
Why?
Right. And so a lot of times, I'll tell you what the schools where I'm at, there's mm-hmm. a lot of fights like that. So that video that came out, fights like that happen on a routine basis because schools are losing control of the hallways because there is no more discipline. There is no more disciplinary action. So with that particular fight, I know the process of what's going to happen is that that kid, they have to have due process inside the school. But then they also, in lieu of expulsion, a lot of these kids are getting outplaced to an extension campus for the fight.
Right.
And then, you know, if they behave themselves, sometimes they can earn their way back into the school. But
well, don't we? With this, we have these alternative schools for kids with behavioral problems and who've demonstrated behavioral problems right. and stuff, too. What are they for? It seems to me they're for people like this who think that beating up people in the hallway is
civic
okay.
duty.
Well, it's okay.
Right. Yeah. So more than likely that kid will be going to an alternative school where they'll be in a more controlled environment so then they can monitor their movements and their activities. There's not as many fights. But unfortunately, and I'm telling you, and you know as well as I do, this is symptomatic of having these kids out of the school system for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
Their social skills in the hallways, they you know, like I'm telling you, in the hallways they have heavy, heavy problems right now in the public school system with kids skipping school, wandering the hallways. A lot of these kids are failing their classes, and then the grades are being overturned, and they're just being given the credit. A lot of these kids are already understanding that hey, I'm still going to get the credit anyway. So they skip the classes. I'm telling you, in the school where I'm at, in the neighborhood, we've got tons of complaints from the neighborhood because these kids are just wandering out in schools. They have no control. We can't. The school can't stop kids from bailing out of the schools and ditching. I have little recourse to which to bring these kids back in. Sure, you have the truancy issue, but then you have the other issue of just you can't arrest your way out of the problem.
Yeah, right.
And then the schools don't want to suspend these kids. Go ahead.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, given your position and perspective then. So, you know, we talked about this, I remember distinctly in Parkland, the terrible shooting at Parkland too. The whole issue you were just raising about they're loath to charge, don't work with police, you know, school, the state board telling administrators, don't work with police, don't work with the school resource officer, don't charge kids. This is all part of leftist ideology to you know, end the school to prison pipeline business. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, especially, yeah, you know, here in the state of Illinois, yeah. And I'll tell you, it does depend on the school district. The school district that I work for, my facility, my principal works with myself and my partner a lot. So we collaborate a lot on these issues and stuff, but there are other school districts where they do not cooperate with
right.
the school resource officers. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, all right. Thanks for the perspective, Jason. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, the leadership of the school matters. And, you know, what you're hearing so far from LT doesn't sound like inspired leadership to me. Didn't even bring the school resource officer into this conversation. The school resource officer asking, why didn't you tell me? Uh-huh. Ralph Rantoul.
Yeah, good morning. The only racism in Lyons Township is the fact that Heaven Washington brings it there. You know, the problem is that just like the school police officer just described, these are just thugs who've appropriated political rhetoric to justify their thuggery. There's always been thugs. There always will be thugs. And unless we address them, like he also addressed weak leadership refusing to do their jobs, this stuff should not be allowed. And then, you know, if we want to take several steps back and take a look at culture, lack of parenting. Thugs usually get addressed properly if their parents are taking care of it. Where are the parents? You know, I mean, there are admittedly some parents that struggle with their thug children not wanting to behave civilly and be a productive part of society. And, you know, that's tough, and I'm sorry that they have to struggle like that, but most of that can be nipped in the bud if, in fact, parents raise their children right, teach them what's moral, what's immoral, what behavior is acceptable, and certainly beating the snot out of a little person. And I don't really care what color the people were.
Right.
I mean, bigger people have been beating littler people up forever. It's the nature of thuggery.
Yeah.
I don't like using bullies just because, you know, it's overused. She's just a thug. And if somebody beat the snot out of her, you know, maybe a little bit of the thuggery would go away. I don't think that's a cure, but maybe a little bit more discipline as a kid growing up, she wouldn't be the beast that she is.
Thanks for the call, Ralph. Well, and also consequences.
Right.
Legal consequences for what she did. I mean, 2 years ago.
I think she has to face them, though.
Two years ago, seven girls at Wheaton North High School were charged with felonies for a premeditated brawl in school, pocket knife, socks filled with batteries, jeez, can of green beans. They were charged with felonies. So the police there, DuPage County State's Attorney, and, you know, to Wheaton North's credit, the school administrator said, no. Nope. There's going to be no quarter given to that. And the question is, will that be the same at LT? We'll see. Will Skokie.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Years ago, like 30 years ago, my daughter, who went to a Catholic elementary school, was attacked by another girl with a knife. And my daughter was able to defend herself. We got called in. The police work, I called in the police. The police came in. The principal, a nun, said, oh, no, this is a school matter. Since when do schools have authority jurisdiction over, you know, law enforcement and adjudication? They're schools. They're not authorities having jurisdiction. And, you know, this is commonly happening, and it has been happening for years and years, where the schools more and more, and I think it has to do with the teachers union, with the Catholic schools, not so much, but, you know, since when did they start to have the authority to adjudicate and figure out the stuff and do process through the school? You know, the kid should be arrested for battery minimum. And why the heck are the politicians putting up with the school boards and a lot of times the unions setting policy and setting up their own little, you know, law enforcement and adjudication, and this is how we're going to handle it, over the law? The law is the law. Union policy does not trump law.
Yeah, right.
That's the point.
Thanks for the call, Will. Yeah, I mean, right. There's what the school did. I mean, you were looking at all the institutions. So what's the school? What did it do? What is it trying to do now? What is the local police department doing or trying to do? What is the Cook County State's Attorney's Office going to do or not to? I mean, they're all on trial here in terms of the issue of equal justice before the law and just general law enforcement. We'll see. Scott, Southwest Burbs.
Yeah, you know, that school was organizing Black Lives Matter marches back a year or two ago, too, through LaGrange. So, and I think that came down from the administration. I don't think it was the student movement. That's all I got to say.
Thanks, Scott. Kathy Joliet.
Hey, Dan. I'm an off-campus coordinator for a public school district, and that resource officer definitely, yet everything you said was valid. One thing I will say, when there's fights like this or big brouhahas, the parents will all of a sudden say their child needs an IEP because they have emotional disability. Mm-hmm. And then you get the IEP involved, and then everything stops where it's at until the evaluations are done to determine what the disability is. And then once the IEP is in place, and it doesn't happen overnight, that's kind of a little longer process. At least it could be up to 60 days. The kid stays in place where they're at. And then once the IEP is in place, then they don't get expelled. They don't get suspended. You have to have 10 suspensions consecutive, like not consecutive, but accumulated. And then you do what's called the manifestation determination review. And at that time, it's determined, was that behavior a manifestation of their disability? And now we go down that rabbit hole.
Well,
before you know it, the school year's out, and then they'll agree to do a 45-day diagnostic placement in an alternative school. And I'm telling you, it's rough because these kids are fighting over anything. And then when I talk to them in the hallway when they're misbehaving, they look at me like they're a store mannequin. I get so aggravated, so aggravated, because they have no respect. But they're store mannequins. They had just got done talking and yelling and screaming through the hallways, and all of a sudden now they're a bunch of mutes. So I can't wait to retire. I mean, I'm like a year or two out. I haven't decided if it's going to be next year or the following year, but I'm exhausted. These kids are just, they're out of control. That officer is totally right. And all your callers, it's out of control.
Thanks for the call, Kathy.
Why do they feel so entitled, and why are they being disrespectful to law enforcement?
Well, and here's
COVID being locked up for almost 2 years,
where does disrespect to disrespectfulness towards law enforcement come from? Have you paid attention to what's going on in culture, in American culture these days, the disposition of the D.C. press corps and its regional outlets? It's pretty straightforward. The interesting thing, though, with respect to what Kathy said. Okay, the school wants to play that game. LT wants to play the IEP game to provide a release valve for her so they don't have to expel her. That's all well and good. That does not get the Western Springs Police Department off the hook. It does not get the Cook County State's Attorney off the hook. They are not there to take orders from the school district on who shall or shall not be arrested and prosecuted for the commission of crime.
She's going to try and say it was self-defense, but doesn't look like self-defense to me. It looks like a planned out attack.
We'll keep you updated as more information becomes available. This developing story, it's already developed since we talked about it earlier in the show this morning. So we'll see, and we'll make sure that we relay what the school district, what the police department, what the Cook County State's Attorney's Office does or does not do.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Connecting good intentions with sound economics. One of my favorite mantras of any organization in the country, and that is the charge of the Acton Institute in Michigan, named after Lord Acton.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
Power corrupts absolute. Power corrupts absolutely. That Lord Acton. Mm-hmm. And since Frederick von Hayek said to be controlled in our economic pursuits is to be controlled in everything, it seems wise that we would think very carefully about the rules of the game we set up for our economy in a free society. Well, that is the center of so much of Father Robert Sirico's writings over the year, and he has another offering. The offering is The Economics of the Parables. Reverend Robert Sirico, president, co-founder of the Acton Institute, joins us now. Father Sirico, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. It's great to be in Chicago.
So it's the this sort of age-old question, particularly when you have Marxists, old or new, cloaking themselves in religion. Is Christianity compatible with capitalism? The Beatitudes tell us about the distribution of goods to those who don't have goods. But what the left always leaves out is it it's a call on the individual to practice those works of charity. I don't recall anything in the Beatitudes or much else in the Bible where it talks about government as the means to redistribute the fruits of labor. It's always about the individual because that's the unit of analysis. It's the individual who has the relationship with Christ, not the collective.
It's also the case because that's where the moral decision-making takes place. I mean, even if redistribution of wealth was effective, which I contend it is not, that is the political redistribution of wealth. If I take money from you and give it to person A, how does that make you a more moral person? The claims of the gospel are far more radical than that. They want to rule your heart. The gospel wants to rule your heart, not just your body, not just your bank account, because when the heart is captivated by the call of Christ, by a moral vision, then you have the entirety of the person, not just, you know, the extraneous stuff like money.
Well, then what does the Bible teach us about distribution of inheritances? I mean, every Sunday I always hear, give unto others as Christ has given unto you.
Well, you have a number of the parables. This book that I've written on the parables deals with question of inheritance. I mean, the famous story is, of course, the story of the prodigal son. The prodigal son takes his inheritance, goes off and squanders it, comes back destitute. And then you have another son who has been toiling for a long time, and he's resentful of the embrace of the father and the fact that the father's willing to throw a big banquet for the son. So you have a lot of that there. I mean, the very notion of inheritance, I should point out right at the outset, is predicated on private property, right? You wouldn't have inheritances if you didn't have private property. It would just be confiscated. So I think that says something about it. And then the particularities of inheritance law change from culture to culture. The biblical stuff says the oldest male gets virtually everything. Now he has some responsibilities with that, but that's the way the first century Palestine Jewish culture operated.
And rather than give unto others as I have given unto you, as Amy was referencing, in a society that is government-centric, that's dominated by government, it seems to me what you see happen is do unto others before they do it unto you. And that's what we have going on right now in so many respects. It's, you know, it's the rent seeking.
We're bumping up against a wonderful quip that I found in the course of writing this book from Winston Churchill. It comes from 1908. And he says, the socialism, in quotes, of the Christians said, all that is mine is yours. The socialism of the modern era says, all that is yours is mine. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're getting to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's taking from people and not having people surrender and share. And all of this is against the backdrop of the incredible productivity of the market system itself. That is the discovery process of entrepreneurs and then the productivity that employs so many people and provides goods and services at accessible prices. All of this becomes the normative way in which people who are in poverty climb out of poverty, not redistribution. Redistribution and charity, and I believe very much in charity, comes into play when there's an emergency circumstance. But the normal way in which people rise out of poverty isn't through charity. It's through work, access to work and goods and services that are affordable.
Well, did Jesus intend to communicate economic lessons?
No, and that's a very good and important question, and one that I take right from the beginning, the introduction to the book, and then I repeat it several times throughout the book. My purpose in writing this book is not to say Jesus is teaching economics. Jesus is teaching morality and a morality focused on the kingdom of God. But what he does utilize in the telling of these stories, in these parables, are a number of economic assumptions, as you've already pointed out, inheritance laws. But there's also investment. There's also productivity. In the parable of the talents, Jesus hands these talents to these servants, and they're expected to be productive with them. A whole host of economic presuppositions
are operative there, but it's not Jesus' intention to teach economics. I don't think there's a biblical economics. Now, I would disagree with some people who do believe that, but I think economics comes into existence as an intellectual discipline, not as a practice, because it's always there. When you have scarcity, you have economics. But as an intellectual discipline, it comes into play much later in human history.
What are we to take from the fact that we have parallel tracks of decline, people who believe in a free market economy in this country and people who consider themselves people of faith? So we're seeing more secularization and less support for capitalism.
Yeah, it gets to be a very complex question in that there are even some today now religious conservatives who are calling for a larger state, who want a kind of almost a theocracy. And then you have people who culturally are very liberal who want to see less of a state. So it's a real mix of things. And that's why what I'm trying to identify here is the principles that are at play. But when you have a society where the ethical system begins to erode, some people would say it's just shifting, but I think it's eroding. And we see the effects of that on the culture as a whole, the increase in out of wedlock birth, the decline in the economy as a whole, and the ethics of people operating in market systems. When you see all of this begin to take place, and you also notice that it's precisely those areas of difficulty in society that the government subsidizes, or that there's a robust intervention of the state, you have to ask yourself if this isn't brought on or at least exacerbated by a kind of central planning mentality.
So we answer the question, is Christianity compatible with capitalism? Is Christianity compatible with socialism?
No, not if it's properly defined. I mean, socialism is coercive, right? Socialism is the forced expropriation of people's property. And certainly Christianity would oppose that, because Christianity believes that private property is sacred, right? From the commandment, you know, thou shalt not steal. And then going on, I know some people will say, and I handle this in the book, the question of early Christianity's what they call socialism, because they were sharing. But again, that goes back to, was that sharing animated by a commitment to a moral goal, or was it forced sharing? And it was very clearly in the Acts of the Apostles not forced sharing. It was a moral impulse that people had. It was also an experiment at a given period of time. You know, if there's a catastrophe, people pool their resources to get through the catastrophe.
And so did Jesus condemn people for being rich?
He condemned those who loved their riches more than they loved other people. But the notion that Jesus judged people solely on their bank account is not the case. I mean, even where Jesus encounters this young man who's very wealthy and says, come and be my follower, but first you have to go and sell all that you have. Notice that he says sell it, not give it away. He asks him to give it away, but first he asks him to sell it. And that, I think that's very significant. It's very commonly overlooked that if the man is going to be a good servant, he has to get a good profit from what resources he has. And then he can become a good servant because he's sold his belongings. So what Christ is calling people to do is to detach from the love of wealth, but not from wealth as such. In other words, wealth is not intrinsically evil in the Christian understanding of it. As you read through not only the scriptures, but into the history of Christianity, it's certainly not intrinsically evil. It's what you do with it, how attached you are to it, whether you worship it over and above God.
He is Father Robert Sirico, president and co-founder of the Acton Institute. His new book, The Economics of the Parables. Pick it up.
Father Sirico, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you both. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Prices of U.S. farm products have risen 31% March over March, March of 2021 or to March of 2022, according to data released by the Department of Ag on Friday. Eggs, meat, vegetables, chickens, dairy, corn, wheat, they're all up significantly. Grain and oilseed up 5.5% from February, 28% from March of last year. Feed grain, 7.5%, 33% from a year ago. Corn is up 46 cents from last month and $1.67 from March of last year. And against this backdrop, you still have people playing ESG politics. Like Carl Icahn, of all people. This was brought to our attention from our friend James Freeman, who writes the Best of the Web column for the Wall Street Journal. And I didn't want Carl Icahn to get passed up on this. Urging BlackRock and other big index fund managers to support his proxy fight at McDonald's for better treatment of pregnant pigs. This guy, Icahn, who's, you know, a huge corporate raider, multi-cajillionaire, he's got a $50,000 stake in McDonald's, and he's fighting, from an ESG perspective, the environmental social governance, the sort of the Marxist play against corporate America, embraced by so much of corporate America, which is Marxist. But McDonald's is pushing back, and good for them. The CEO of McDonald's, Chris Kempczinski, saying, look, we need to keep our product affordable to families in this inflationary environment, frankly, stagflationary environment. And he said the proposal by Icahn would require 300 to 400 times the number of animals currently housed without crates. And such a move would significantly increase the its costs and place a financial burden on the costs it would then impose on customers passing through. Wow. And Freeman makes the point. Is it socially conscious to force price increases on middle and lower income diners at McDonald's while inflation is raging at 8.5%? And that's probably a lowball number. Good question. Well, let's put that to another pig. He's the capitalist pig.
I see what you did there.
Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, also author of a new textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, what do you say about Carl Icahn?
Well, I'm disappointed. I'm frustrated, Dan. I mean, it's great to be with you both. Great to be with the audience this morning. I mean, look, it's easy to be in a bad mood after the S&P having the worst start to the year since 1939. So you caught me in a bad mood and a frustrated mood, as I think a lot of Americans are. I mean, Dan, they're seeing, as you said, look, prices are up not just for things at the grocery store, but for things everywhere. That's what inflation is. And exactly that frustrating philosophy, that ideology behind Carl Icahn in the so-called ESG movement, as you said, I think it's right, it's Marxism come to corporate America. It's that same philosophy that's fueling the inflation. It's the same philosophy that's fueling the problem with the labor markets. And that's really behind so much of what's crippling the economy these days. That, you know, it's not as if the water has changed in America, and it's not as if we're destined to go through these boom-bust cycles. They're created by exactly that intervention that I know you and Amy talk about so frequently, the intervention in the economy. And, you know, people are saying, well, we're going to pay for the inflation. Folks, we're paying for it now. We're paying through it for higher prices, lower quality of life, and what Bastiat always talked about, that is what unseen, the jobs, the innovation that haven't been created because of all these higher prices and interventions in the economy. So It's a frustrating time to be an investor, a frustrating time to be an American, given what you know, the types of ideas that are leading certainly the economy forward.
And Monday's grocery store day, my stomach always gets in knots. But how long is Biden going to say that this is Putin's price hike?
Well, I mean, that is a fundamental misunderstanding of what inflation is. I mean, inflation, Amy, isn't just prices going up. In fact, it's an artificial expansion of the money supply. And not only has President Biden been doing that with exorbitant spending, but the Federal Reserve has been doing that for exorbitant spending. I mean, in effect, we're paying for all that stimulus now. Oh, you remember that? All the stimulus, that billions and hundreds of billions of dollars in the paycheck protection program and the helping the landlord, the lessees and everything else. You know, we're paying for that now. Milton Friedman knew it. I know your audience knows it. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And all the billions that were spent and passed out in years past, we're paying for it in a slowing economy. And, you know, Dan, I got to say, I'm a market guy. I'm an investment professional. And when you look at the NASDAQ down 21% already this year, the S&P down 13%, look, the only thing green on my screen is oil. Oh, yeah, it's up 80% just this year. So until we get some change in philosophy, you know, my fear is that markets aren't going to improve anytime soon.
Well, and that change in philosophy requires, I mean, there's a sort of a fundamental misunderstanding, purposeful probably. But the focus of the administration and so much of Congress is demand side, when the problem is just like it was after Ford and Carter coming into the Reagan era, it's supply side. So you have to, and I'm not talking about supply chain, as you know, I'm talking about supply side. You have to make the business environment more attractive for productive economic activity like investment and expansion and entrepreneurship.
Exactly, Dan. I mean, people talk about the economy like it's this some robot out there. I mean, all the economy is hundreds of millions of very mutually beneficial, profit-seeking relationships. And all government can do is get in the way of that. And you mentioned, Daniel, President Ford, he called inflation public enemy number one. That's how serious people were taking inflation. And of course, what peaked in the late 70s started 10 years earlier. So don't want to be a Cassandra or Cassandra, but that's my fear is that, Amy, as you said, Biden's playing, oh, it's Putin, it's this and that supply chain. But, you know, this inflation has probably really just begun. And Carter, to his credit, Dan, you're saying, well, what could Biden do? A cat's out of the bag. You know, Carter, for all his problems, deregulated across the board, everything, you know, stock commissions to airline regulation.
Yeah.
If Biden wanted to do something, let's sell the post office. Let's start deregulating the public education that's driving all these costs up for young people wanting to get an education. So there's some pretty simple things he could do without spending the billions of dollars that could put this economy on such better footing.
Well, and also, too, I mean, think about how far afield they are. I mean, they're just not coming back, which is why this is going to get much uglier before all is said and done. You know, in this environment, you still have their folks bandying about this idea of taxing unrealized gains. We should be talking a minimum about indexing the capital gains rate to inflation. That's 180 degrees from where they are.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And Dan, as you kind of started with, you talk about it, that fundamental philosophy. I mean, many in this country, perhaps even successful folks on Wall Street like Carl Icahn, they believe that wealth redistribution is right, that, you know, it's to each according to his need, from each according to his ability. So, you know, those who took out loans and can't pay them, we're going to take care of that. Those who took out student loans and actually saved and made something of themselves, well, you're now beholden to those wealth. So it's that fundamental. And, it even takes them, look at the hatred, Dan, at someone like Elon Musk, someone like Bill Gates. I mean, these people have changed our lives for so much the better, ways that, you know, even folks on the lowest end of the spectrum, if you will, have benefited from. But they're held in contempt in today's America. They're hidden in today's America. And folks like Elizabeth Warren, who've been on the government teeth for, you know, who knows God long, how long, you know, they're seen as heroes. They're seen as just moral victors. So, as you said, we're completely turned around. It's philosophical, and it's what's haunting and hurting the economy and the markets literally today and certainly for the last number of years.
What's your prognostication on the immediate future of big blue city America, places like Chicago, commercial real estate, the business environment generally?
Well, I mean, money is mobile and investment is mobile. And as the old saying goes, Dan and Amy, it's, you know, goes where it's treated most favorably. And in so many cities in America, I mean, it's treated less and less and less favorably. You all have been Chicagoans, our audience, you've been Chicagoans for a long time. Well, you know, it's pretty obvious to the eye that crime is up. Oh, yeah, taxes are up, and quality of life is demonstrably lower. So we've been saying for years now, this great migration. Home prices in Tampa are up something like 100% over the last 3 years. You can't say that anything about, you know, the 606 area codes or really anything in the northern part of Illinois. And that's due to exactly what you're saying, governance. And, you know, my fear is, again, not a Cassandra, but I would hate to see Chicago go through that death and ultimately slight rebirth of Detroit. I mean, that can happen. There's no monopoly that any city has on growth or success. So unless the politics change, I believe in this city, we're headed down a very, very difficult path for those who choose to stay and, oh, I don't know, pay the bill.
Well, how long do you think this is going to last? And do you think we'll ever see gas prices in the $3 range ever again? Or is that over?
Well, we could. Yeah, I mean, Amy, we could see it easily. We could see it in a matter of, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year if so many of the regulations, restrictions on gas and oil exploration were lifted. And, you know, Dan said it right. I mean, if there's more production, you see prices go down. But, you know, every dollar that's shifted from legitimate, useful energy sources towards the cockamamie green ones that don't work and use fossil fuels in the end, I mean, my friend Alex Epstein is always has a funny line that the Tesla is a coal-powered car. You know, where does the energy to power the... So, you know, that whole green agenda is doing nothing but pushing energy prices up. And, of course, that's the Greens' goal. I mean, don't believe it when the Greens says they want to, you know, they want to improve the earth, but not for man, you know, for the owls or the pigs. They want the pigs to have a better quality of life, not man. And, you know, if you care about your life, I think man's goal should be your purpose.
And a final thought on the markets, you're pretty bearish for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about your own context. And, you know, I do ultimately believe in the American spirit. I believe in the American way of life. I don't think we've sunk as far as Europe. So when I'm looking, Dan and Amy, 5, 8, 10 years out, I do believe markets will be higher ultimately. But it could be for a really rough period of time now. And I'd only liken it, you know, certainly with the major indices, that perhaps like the period of time in the early 2000s through about 2010. I mean, basically you had about 8 or 9 years of a flat, fairly difficult market. It's not my complete prediction, but that's my fear, at least short term, is that we're going to pay for all this profligate spending. We're going to pay through it through a subdued and ultimately worse economy for at least the short to medium term.
He is Jonathan Honig, founding member of the Capitalist Pig Hedge Fund and Fox News contributor, also author of A New Textbook of Americanism, The Politics of Ayn Rand. Jonathan, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you guys. Have a good morning.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And I wasted a trip out to Joliet yesterday. No, it was actually great. I did some track racing for the first time ever in my life, part of my midlife crisis.
Yeah, did you have to sign? Was that a birthday gift from somebody for your 50th?
Yeah, at the Audubon Country Club in Joliet, which is an unbelievable facility. I didn't know that it was there. So much fun, and thanks very much to the Sedali Group. That's the racing
sponsors
group.
Now?
No, it's a racing group out there that I went around the track in one of their Miatas. It was fun.
How fast did you go, and what did you learn from your experience?
Well, first of all, I sort of look like Michael Dukakis in the tank with my helmet on. It was not good. But it was. I mean, it's just like, you know, driving around in a circle, driving on a track. When you actually do it, as I'm sure many listeners have, you learn about the nuances and that there's a lot more to it than just, you know, driving around in a circle. So it was really cool. It was a lot of fun.
Where can we see the pictures?
I posted some on Facebook. I think I've got
you didn't tweet it.
I've got a video. Yeah, well, you know, you gotta
go to
Facebook.
Yeah. I don't have Facebook.
Go to the Dan Prof fan page, and then you'll be able to see
you have
that.
A fan page?
You can follow me on the Dan Prof fan page.
You have Facebook. A fan page?
I mean, just like a regular
page. Who do you
page.
Think you are? You're turning 50 now. I got a fan page, and I'm at the track.
Also part of my midlife crisis.
Okay.
So here's the thing, though. Why even bother becoming a member of the Audubon Country Club and going out there? when I can just drag race on Lower Wacker in Chicago. It's right by my house. So, you know, get a Ring of Fire going, get my friends out there, like sort of like a 21st century American Graffiti. Look like a good time.
Yeah, basically they're at Lower Wacker and Columbus Avenue. A few hours, Sunday morning, you know, right before you go to church.
Perfect
time.
They
put a gasoline, and then they lit the gasoline on fire, a Ring of Fire, a bunch of people inside. Some decided to jump out.
Yeah.
Some stayed in the circle. And then a car driving around at Lord knows how what kind of speed is. They're drag racing around the Ring of Fire.
That was cool.
I mean, there's such great control of the city right now. We had 32 shot, 8 killed. It was so bad that Moulin Rouge. They canceled their show last night. Well, I'm just saying there's so much violence in Chicago.
I think it's cool. I think it's a great improvement over midnight basketball to do Sunday wee hours, drag racing, the Ring of Fire, the whole thing. I mean, think of all the great streetcar racing movies that it conjures up. I just mentioned American Graffiti. That's one of the best. You know, I mean, the kids probably like your Fast and Furious, but Days of Thunder. Maybe we could do some NASCAR racing with some bumping and stuff going on Michigan Ave.
The criminals have taken over Chicago. Here it is. And we did tweet it out if you want to see it, because it does look like a scene out of a movie.
In the middle of the circle. Is it on fire?
The street's on fire.
Sorry,
what?
You said it's 102. On fire right now with individuals in the middle of a circle.
And it burns the Ring of Fire.
Streets on fire. Now they're lighting the streets on fire.
I wish whoever called in to dispatch would have gone, you know, Johnny Cash on it. That would have been a little bit more fun. I mean, it's a community activity.
Oh, okay.
Let's enjoy it. I'm looking forward to
next weekend or the Summer of Joy.
Well, this is part of the Summer of Joy is to have fun community events, sort of block party-ish type events like drag racing on Lower Wacker. So, you know, I'm going to see if I can borrow one of the cars from the Audubon and bring it down to Lower Wacker for this weekend.
Can you imagine? Prof shows up in the car. All right, coming up on Chicago's Morning
Answer. You can be out there with, like, the handkerchief and the short shorts doing the, you know, yeah. Wouldn't that be great? The city's a lot of fun. It's getting more fun each passing weekend.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy and Gary Rabine, businessman, Rabine Paving, you know, Bull Valley Golf Club up in Woodstock, you know.
Where you got your hole-in-one.
Yeah, that's right. My one and only. He is also a candidate for governor, Republican candidate for governor. He's got a new ad up.
And let's see if you like it. I like it. It involves a steamroller.
This is where Illinois career politicians got us. Crime, corruption, hardship. I'm Gary Rabine. I built one of the leading paving businesses in America. Now, I'm paving the way for a new Illinois. By breaking up corruption, we're free to focus on what really matters. Slashing property taxes, ending our kids' indoctrination, and protecting life, our jobs, and our streets.
I'm Gary Rabine. I'm running for governor. And I'll keep rolling until the job is done.
All right, Gary Rabine joins us now. Gary, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan, Amy, how are you guys?
Good. So now that we're into the debate season portion of the primary campaign, I mean, other than Richard Irvin, who's not participating, but the rest of the candidates are, yourself included, where do you think the divisions are between you and the rest of the field in terms of saying this is why I'm the best man for the job in the moment?
Yeah, you know what? I believe we have two Democrats in the race, in my opinion. If you look at the history of the two people in this race, anybody could do a little bit of due diligence and figure that one out. And then we've got some conservatives in the race that have to fight to win, and we've got to have somebody that can win Chicagoland area and win the general. And I'm very confident I can do that.
Wait, who's the other Democrat that's running as a Republican? We know Richard Irvin, but who else?
Well, look at the history of all of them. But, I mean, there's a guy down south there that has some money from Silicon – you know, all his money came from Silicon Valley, Democrat Democrat funders over history, over the last 10 years in a big way. Never really supported any Republicans except Adam Kingsinger that I know of, except this candidate they supported in Southern Illinois.
And
But
go back to your pitch, you know, that you can win Chicagoland and thus you can win the general election. Develop that more. Why? Why do you say that?
Well, because, you know, I believe we need somebody that really understands economics really well and understands tax, you know, really, you know, can build a tax team and an economics team that can reduce regulation in our state. I've got 13 companies, eight of our companies. If you look at them today, they probably shouldn't be in Illinois. Five or six of them definitively shouldn't be in Illinois. Probably eight of them really shouldn't be when we look at the cost of regulation in Illinois compared to any state around us or any good state in the country. So, you know, business people are looking at this every day and leaving our state in droves. I know this better than anybody else. I've been part of Job Creators Network, and we've been fighting this for the last 12 years federally. But, you know, locally, I get it.
Well, what would be the first thing you'd do, I mean, to help businesses stay in Illinois?
Well, I mean, if you look at the regulatory environment, we've never stopped piling on regulation in small business. So I can tell you there's been seven or eight new ones in the last year that hurt us, right? And they most of them add more liability so that businesses have higher costs in workers' compensation, higher costs in insurance, all insurances, higher tax on our properties. You may have seen this a couple of days ago. Ted Dabrowski came out with Illinois businesses pay more tax on property than any state in the country. These things are killing us. I mean, all you got to do is go across the border and you're gonna make more money. You're gonna have less liability. And so we got to start peeling the stupid liability, the stupid regulations off of business. We have more costs in a lawsuit. If an Illinois business person loses a lawsuit, the interest on that lawsuit, if you lose or settle, is higher than any state in the country now. So all these things continue while you know business people work their butts off. They can't pay attention to damage these legislators are doing.
Speaking of individuals or groups that need to be steamrolled politically, what about the Illinois Republican Party establishment? Are they the leadership in the House and the Senate at the state party level? Are they people you think that as governor you work with or you pound into the pavement?
You know, you have to try to work with everybody there, but boy, it's not going to be easy when the Republicans are backing a pure Democrat, right? I mean, we got leaders in this Republican Party who just get behind what they think is the big money, and the big money, if they really realize, big money's not there forever, but big money will be gone if their person loses, probably. And you know, just like, you know, these people, they follow the money, no matter what, no matter how left it is and how bad it is, and that's what's happening right now. So it's hard to respect our Republican establishment in Illinois, knowing that they're following the money. They don't care what the ethics or morals or the policies are behind this person.
Wanted to get your take on cultural issues. There's a reference to indoctrination in the classroom in your TV spot. Obviously, you can only talk so much in 30 seconds. But, you know, on matters like curriculum, these fights that are happening at the local school board level, school district level, on matters like boys participating in women's sports, how important are these issues to you?
Extremely important. We're ruining our kids. We got to battle this hard. You know, we can't have boys in girls' bathrooms. We can't have boys in women's sports. We can't be teaching our kids of color that they're disadvantaged and they're victims. It's wrong. We got to do all this. Hey, but Dan, I heard last week that you mentioned that the JCM lawsuit, that I was just kind of one of 300, you know, one group that was on, and I came in late. I didn't hear it, right? I just heard it through a friend, but I just want to correct that and say that, you know, I was the first money in on that lawsuit, on that JCM lawsuit. I was the first money in, first plaintiff for JCM. And we've got five other CEOs that joined us, but we were the plaintiffs that actually filed the appeal in the Sixth Circuit after we lost. In 43 minutes, filed the appeal. We had an amazing law firm, and we won that thing. It was a big deal. So, you know, I heard you minimize lives. Gary's involved, but it was no big deal.
Well, that's not a, That's not exactly what I said, and this was a conversation I had with Joe Remke, who you'll be happy to know was in full Gary Rabine battle regalia at the Illinois Right to Life dinner on Friday night.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I know you do. I like him too. We just disagree on this race.
I like his wife better, but
who wouldn't like his wife better than Joe? But so on that. So my point was not that it was no big deal. My point was the Job Creators Network lawsuit was filed in November of 21.
Yeah.
So
October. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, my point, and this wasn't critical. This was a comparison, and so one of the things I've said about Darren Bailey is when nobody would stand up, and it's really focused on the General Assembly and the Republican Party generally in this state. I'm talking about in the first year and a half of these lockdowns and school shutdowns and junk science-driven mandates. Bailey was standing up. He was suing the governor over his, you know, unilateral governance of the state, and then ultimately got involved in the mask thing too with divorce. So it's not minimizing what you and the Job Creators Network did, but it's just talking about, you know, when it was really unpopular, when nobody wanted to dip their toe in the water, Darren Bailey did. Now, you also did what you described doing as part of the Job Creators Network. I'm not minimizing it. I'm just talking about the timeline.
Yeah, well, again, that was for himself in his own mask. Mine was for over 80 million people this represented, and it really was a big deal because I've got a spotlight on my business by the federal government now. That's crazy. You have to come and see what's going on, but it's crazy what happens when you stick your neck up to fight the federal government, and it's wrong. It should be illegal, and we're experiencing, right? So all these things are no big deal to stand up, and we all must, right? Darren, I like Darren, actually. Darren and I have become friends, but his case was one that he stood up for himself and won, great, for his own mask. Mine was for 80 million working Americans, and I guarantee you, I got more heat on my back because of it. And I don't care because I knew this was going to happen. I understand this stuff. It's sickening that when you stand up against these left wing nut jobs, that they have the ability to put this pressure on you in business or in your life.
Well, what are they trying to do?
Well, they don't have to try to do my. All they have to do is do audits. So they have the ability to do audits anytime they want. I've got these 13 companies. So what do? They audit this, they audit that, they audit different taxes, right? And every time they do, it costs us money to actually do our own accounting. If they find stuff, you lose. It costs you a lot more money. Now we're very strong in our accounting. I have no fear. But I got to tell you, it's still a big pain in the butt, and it still costs you a lot of money.
Are any of the other allied business people and companies that are part of Job Creators Network, are they feeling the same heat that you're feeling at the state or federal level?
Nobody else is running. Initially, there wasn't. When I first had my first issue, I called these other guys, a couple of guys I became friends with. They hadn't. But that's a good question. I should call them now because they're not running for anything. They're not sticking their head up in the political environment at all. But are they? That's a great question. I need to check on that because I've not talked to these guys for a few months.
And with respect to so round out a little bit more of your vision for the state. I mean, one of the few bright spots in Illinois is the Opportunity Scholarship Program, as you know, and Empowered Illinois is sort of the lead horse with that. This is something that's going to be targeted for elimination if Pritzker is reelected and the balance of power stays the same in the General Assembly, which it's highly likely to do. The protecting and trying to expand the Opportunity Scholarship to expand school choice in the state, as we see happening in more successful states like Indiana or Florida, this part of your platform as well.
Yeah, the most successful states are doing something like that, and this is one good thing that we got done that last administration, right? That many of you guys got done. I got to tell you, the best states in the country do something like it. We look at Tennessee, that was terrible before. They're becoming a great state for school for education because of programs like this. Florida, Indiana next door. I mean, we've got to compete, or we're going to lose our culture in our state. So of course we have to go after this stuff. It's a no-brainer. We've got our school systems. Our kids need to be able. Our kids and families need to be able to walk. Their money needs to be able to walk with them. They want to go to a different school because their school sucks. They should be able to walk down 2 miles away or drive 5 miles away to go to a better school.
That's the kind of plain spokenness I like. If their school sucks, let's just lay it out straight. Let's talk like a human being. That's right. What I like.
So Gary, what are you hearing from people though on the campaign trail? What is their most number one concern right now?
You know, there's some things that I heard that make me sick, and I got to tell you, we're not talking about enough. Our sanctuary state combined that Rauner gave us combined mm-hmm. with this governor who ended the communication of ICE with all our police and federal police makes me sick. I'm hearing that we have more human trafficking coming in our state, any other state in the country, more drug trafficking as well. So we don't feel this in the city of Chicago because it just doesn't seem to pile on fast enough to make us worry because you have all the MERS going on, other things. But other places in our state, we've got these little counties where meth and these fentanyl is ruining the culture, these communities. And we've got I ran across a young man that was a deputy sheriff. His friend ran across a van, pulled a van over with 9 young men in it, under 13 years old. They would not say a word. They looked to be all Hispanic. This guy brought somebody that spoke Spanish onto the site. Within an hour, they had to leave. They had to shut the doors with 3 adult men and 9 boys. They had to shut the doors and watch the van roll away because they had no way. These kids wouldn't say a word to basically commit that there's something going on here. They couldn't talk to ICE like they could before, federal police. Legally they can't do that anymore. So we are ruining our state now. We're killing kids and we're ruining lives of kids that are coming to our state. The last thing that we did was the Notification Act. So think of a little girl now that's being trafficked that gets pregnant. No big deal. Take them to the abortion center. They don't even have to notify a parent now. I mean, we are the worst state in the country now for drug trafficking and human trafficking. We're not talking about it enough.
And on the issue of public safety, I mean, you mentioned one thing we can do. I'm taking from your explanation there, repeal sanctuary state status and work with federal law enforcement to remove people here illegally, particularly those who are violent offenders. What else can the governor do? I mean, you know, policing is still primarily a local matter. Obviously, you have the state police at your disposal, but they're not so much in the business of trying to prevent violent crime in places like Chicago or Rockford or East St. Louis. And so when you think about what a governor could do, what a Governor Rabine would do, what besides the usage of the state police are you thinking about?
Yeah, so, you know, I think I told you guys, I joined the Republican Governor Association about 6 years ago now, and so I collaborate with these governors, and I ask them these same questions. And, you know, Rick Scott is somebody I look to as a mentor I talk to, you know, when I need to. Mitch Daniels is a great guy that I get many conversations with, and Kim Reynolds is awesome. Right? But all these people, you ask them the same question. And they said, you know, every state has, you know, different ways to create leverage on bad state's attorneys, on bad mayors. And you know the big hammer, of course, is the National Guard. But boy, there's many other things, many other points of leverage you have to use. And we got to be able to recall lousy state's attorneys, like we have the Soros-backed state's attorneys. We got to be able to recall them, and you can't do that right now. But I got to believe that when I talk to these other governors, there's a way to pass a law that allows you to recall bad state's attorneys like this. But you know, you got to have leaders that don't sleep at night when people are dying in the streets. This leader, this governor, he didn't care. He sleeps fine in Florida or Lake Geneva or his mansion in the city with his 20 security. He doesn't care about anybody. I mean, we need people. We need leaders that actually won't sleep at night when bad things are going on. And you get, that means you get involved and you use every point of leverage possible. Whether it be, you know, your National Guard, whether it be just your points of communication, or grabbing somebody around the neck.
He is Gary Rabine. He's a successful businessman, candidate for governor in the Republican primary, June 28th. RabineForGovernor.com. RabineForGovernor.com is the website to get more information on his candidacy and campaign. Gary, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Amy. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy, and I wanted to
to devote a little bit more time to this, but our friend Mark Perry has come up with his annual For Every 100 Women list.
Oh boy.
This is always interesting. No, it's just interesting because it shows the distribution of men to women and so many things. So, for example, for every 100 young women in October of 2021,
yes,
who graduated high school and enrolled in college, there were 89 men. Who graduated high school and were enrolled in college and employed, there were 95 men. Who graduated from high school in 2021 were enrolled in college and were unemployed. 122 men to every 100 women.
All right.
So it's just, I mean, it's just an example of some of the data that's just interesting in terms of the male-female divide, if you still go by, you know, the standard definitions of male and female, which we do. And it, as it relates to thinking about all of these things, what's happening in K-12 education, what's happening at the university level, fold in conversation about ROI as we're talking about student loan debt forgiveness, the focus of the gender focus of K-12 and post-secondary education and the implications of that in terms of the composition of the workforce, the productivity of men, the intactness of families. It really, these data points are really foundational for that conversation. We talked about it a bit earlier in the show. We were talking about student loan forgiveness and how dominant women are in college and, you know, all fields other than computer science, math, and engineering. And where are the men? And then you say, well, where are the men to be heads of households? Well, they were left behind. Many of them were left behind a long time ago, like at the K-12 level. It's just a real thing. It's not Bobby Riggs, Billie Jean King. It's not Battle of the Sexes. It's thinking about these distributions and their implications, you know, society writ large. That's all.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.